found this in Ganarum. Ganarmir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is David Duncan, and with me...
Faith Hertzberg.
And Guy Davis.
Davis. We were just watching Galaxy Quest.
Yes, Galaxy Quest is an awesome movie. It's one of the best Star Trek movies ever.
You mean Star Trek documentaries.
Star Trek documentaries.
Yeah, about that too. Semantics.
Yes. This is the long-awaited, somewhat teased, not as long as we teased the Klingon episode.
That's true.
Not nearly as long. Not even close.
And mostly teased behind the scenes. But this is going to be our Galaxy Quest episode. We are taking a step away from Star Trek, but not as far as you'd think.
No, actually. Galaxy Quest is pretty close to, about as close to Star Trek as you can get.
And rewatching this movie, you know, after seeing the reboots, I noticed they're like laser guns. They look almost exactly like the ones in Into Darkness.
They do.
They're silver.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
They're silver, and like, you know, they've got like this almost like a blaster, that sweet pop, and it's like you don't even see the beam almost. It just like hits and it's got that crack sound. Like the ones in Star Trek and Star Trek in the Darkness have. It doesn't have the long beams like, you know, in Star Trek. So it's almost like, I wonder if Star Trek in the Darkness kind of like picked that up from Galaxy Quest.
It was one of those late night moments of, well, how should we make this prop look? I got an idea.
Yeah, let's make it look like a Star Trek. No, I mean, a Star Trek movie, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So in case you guys haven't seen the movie, it is a Star Trek-esque parody starring Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, and Alan Rickman.
Which is really kind of weird when you start thinking about Home Improvement and Aliens at the same go.
Yeah.
Well, and then there's Tony Shalhoub, who's in there too, so you got Monk.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was really starting to mess with me about halfway through the movie. I was like, this just doesn't feel right.
Like, in the intro, like, when they're showing, like, the old show, the old Galaxy Quest show at the convention, like, when he gets up, he almost has, like, a weird Asian look to his face, and it doesn't show up anywhere else in the movie. Like, he's got his face, like, super scrunched
up. Yeah. He's playing Fred Kwan. that's the whole point. There's a lot of really subtle, that's what's brilliant about this particular movie, is there's a lot of really subtle, interesting statements made about Star Trek, specifically Star Trek, which is why this is so much fun and why I call it one of the best Star Trek movies.
Well, it's without a doubt inspired by Star Trek down to, you know, the ship being the NSC Protector, which the NSC is like not the Enterprise.
Right.
Or NTE.
The original script was written by David Howard. And David Howard was he wrote it on spec, and he wrote it like this way that DreamWorks wasn't really big on it, but DreamWorks purchased the script and gave it to Bob Gordon to rewrite, and Bob Gordon was a major fan of Star Trek, and so he figured it could be either a really great idea or a really terrible idea.
And when they cast Tim Allen as the guy, I mean, like, I wasn't very old when this movie came out, but I knew enough to be like, the question, Tim Allen really is like the lead for like a movie? But, you know, but I also think looking at their other casting decisions, like Steve Martin, I'm not trying to diss Steve Martin at all. I just don't see him as a captain. None of the people they picked I could see as a captain. Like, Alec Baldwin was one of them. Kevin Kline, I think.
Kevin Kline and Steve Martin.
Yeah, Steve Martin too. Like I needed none of these guys. It's and Tim Allen too. None of these guys seem like captain material to me.
No, they didn't.
But Tim Allen really pulled it off, and I was really surprised how well he pulled it off.
He really did too. And it was it's interesting because that was like, huh.
Yeah, there's definitely those moments where, because it had a lot of cheese factor, and I was talking with Dave about it before the show, that there's definitely those moments of, well, holy crap, he just did it. He nailed it.
Yeah, there's a couple pretty tense scenes where, like, he really went above and beyond what I would have expected. Yeah, what I would have expected of him. But just in case you haven't seen Galaxy Quest and we're throwing all this behind-the-scenes stuff at you, Galaxy Quest starts off at a convention, very much like a Star Trek convention.
I was having flashbacks. I really was. I was like, I remember watching Into Darkness at a convention, and it looked, probably smelled just like that. Yeah. All the hot, sweaty faces, anxious, waiting. Come on, let's see them. Yeah.
Yeah, at this convention, they're showing the unaired episode of Galaxy Quest that they probably seen at the other previous 17 conventions, because it said it was convention 18 on the poster. So, like, that's a lot of conventions.
Those are the dedicated followers that went to every single one.
Every single one. So they probably seen it 18 times. They probably went to the convention just to see those unaired episodes again.
Well, you probably also have it on, like, a videotape where it's all in... You know, flickers back and forth from black and white to color and has lines. Because, I mean, that was the kind of stuff that I remember somewhere along the line. I had the original TOS bloopers on VHS, and it was just like that. It was like, it was not, you know, the voices were distorted. And
it was so broken. You couldn't
tell what was going on, and there might have been a booby in there somewhere. I don't know.
Kirk's booby?
Anything could happen.
Anything.
Anything could have happened.
Ooh, Nichelle. Ooh, Nichelle. Or Sigourney, speaking of this movie, though, but...
It still works.
Yes. Yes, it does. Anyway, they are doing the convention, and the actors are supposed to appear on stage, and the announcer is having to stretch and come up with a bunch of BS because Tim Allen's character, Jason Nesbitt, has not made it.
Not sure. Yeah. Mm-mm. So what do we call these Galaxy Quest fans? Do we call them galaxies? Questions?
Questers?
Galaxians? What do we call them?
Quester. Questies or questers?
Questers. They get into a fight over whether they're questies or questers. Questers,
yes. Yes, it's a very split between the
we don't discuss it because we don't want to be, you know, as a neutral podcast between questies and questers.
We do not want to create hostile territory there. We love you both.
Yes.
Yeah, we love you both equally.
And we hope you love us
it's
as
like
equally.
Your kids ask if mommy or daddy loves you more. We both do. Equally.
Yes.
Equally.
Yes.
Even though there's two of you. And which one's the least pretentious one?
Right.
Who's not getting in our nerves today? You got it.
Well. So finally, then Jason Nesbitt, the character that's played by Tim Allen, he shows up, and he's been obviously out trying to figure out other appearances or whatever. And this is a great behind the scenes segment too, because we've got Alan Rickman, who plays the analog of Spock. I mean, he plays the character, Dr. Lazarus. He's wearing full makeup, and he is done. He was a Shakespearean actor, and he goes on about how this is the most degrading thing he's ever done.
By Grapthos hammer, you shall be avenged!
Yes.
He doesn't like that line for whatever reason.
Right, because says it over and over and over, which I'm sure is an analogy directly to Leonard Nimoy's I'm Not Spock book, which came out in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which he then immediately, reversed. Anyway, so they meet these they finally get out there on the stage, and before Jason Nesmith's character can say anything, it's over.
It's over.
It's time for autographs. And so
he is shut down.
That's when they go to the autograph signing, where they meet the Thermians from the planet Klaatu, or from the Klaatu Nebula. Yeah, that's right. The Klaatu Nebula.
We need your help.
I didn't get that until later. You know what Klaatu is, right?
No.
That's from the day the Earth stood still.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
Klaatu Brada Nictu.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's very subtle. It's completely and if you're, you know, if you're into Ash and the Evil Dead, that's also the those three words were the important words to get the Necronomicon, and you had to say them to prevent the Necronomicon from eating you. And of course, he said Klaatu Brada, and he couldn't say it. Yeah. The book ate him. Tried to eat him.
I forgot about that. Saying,
I said the words.
The Nama-Nama-Nama-Namacon. Nama.
That was an interesting thing. So he meets the Thermians, who are dressed up in these costumes too, and you know, and Nesbitt's just like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Talk to my agent and get a limo.
Yeah, and get a limo, right? Get a limo. And the Thermians are trying to get him to help them, you know, protect their planet from an evil bad guy, and he's like, yeah, because he thinks it's an appearance.
Yeah, it's like basically he thinks he's going to be on a fan film. And which is what he was doing, and everyone's so upset that he leaves them out whenever he goes and does fan film appearances.
Right.
Which is really funny how, like, this is, like, pertinent to things we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks with fan films.
Exactly. Oh, man.
But he thinks they want to do a fan film. He wants a limo. He wants, you know, a really good ride. But he's trying to get in Gwen DeMarco's pants, and so he goes over and whispers to her as she's trying to do a photo op with some female fans.
Right.
He whispers something in her ear, and she's like, yeah, that was cute when I didn't know you. It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, that is exactly what that means.
Yeah. We're like, we all know what that means.
It means before I knew you were a dick, you were kind of cool.
Yep. So then we go on and we move to that bathroom scene, which is interesting, where they're talking about how everybody's just a jerk and stupid and stuff like that. And
so specifically and him. And they say,
they weren't saying it to him. They were saying it to each other.
Yeah, but they were speaking directly of him, though, because it's like, everyone hates him. He doesn't even see how much they hate him. And like, what a bunch of jokes, signing $15 autographs. That really dates the movie, because I think autographs are a lot more expensive now.
Yeah, they are.
You're starting out like $20-$25 easy.
Yeah, think about how many of those autographs they sell, too. Wow. Yeah,
and that's before you ask for a photo.
Yeah.
At which point, the price then doubles.
Or triples, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, if it's Bill Shatner, it's like triple.
And depending on if it's creation or not.
And there's a lot of times you have to schedule ahead of time to even begin to consider getting photos these days.
Yeah,
Yeah.
It's That's a crazy true. Way how the conventions are going now. Very, very almost machine-like. You gotta get your stuff in the cog or you get left out.
Well, you know, honestly, it feels like another pay-to-play.
Yeah, although I'm of two worlds on that one. Because I mean, I used to definitely be very upset about the idea of paying for an autograph. Then I thought about it. I'm like,
they need reimbursed for their time.
For art, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying like it's, you know, it's unfair.
That's not the issue.
How the conventions like run you through these gamuts.
Yeah, and now you have these sign-ups. Like, I understand organizing photos and things like that and everything, but it seems like everywhere it's sort of turned into there's going to be a cost. Like, there's always an additional fee.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as bad. Like, I remember when Dragon Con used to cost me $400, and now you're lucky if it costs you under $8.
Wow.
And that's including parking. I mean, they get you, like, and it's understandable, but it's a lot of things start to cost a lot more money. Parking goes up every year, you know. Food court fees go up, you know. It's just the little things.
Yeah, the last three times I went to PAX, the parking got more expensive every year. I was like, what's going on? Like, it's a dumpy old parking lot.
Yeah.
Downtown Boston, though, but still.
MomoCon's going to cost about $100 for the weekend, for three nights.
Wow.
Oh, man.
That's
just for parking?
That's overnight parking at the facility. It's $20 per day.
Oh, man.
It's you know, it's understandable because it costs more to maintain the level of security, but it's just, it's kind of surprising when you look at how it's risen. And I completely sidetracked us.
Nah, it's all good.
No, it's, I think that's parcel.
I think as we talked about before this episode, this would probably go more sideways than regular episodes, because not only is this, you know, a Star Trek spoof, it's got lots of subtle things, and it also talks to a lot of geek culture, not just Star Trek. It talks to just conventions in general, as we just got off on this tangent.
Yeah, because like I did notice back when we used to go and meet everybody, and I got to meet my first round of movie stars and everybody, it didn't feel as much like you're doing the cattle herd shuffle. And you can even, like, now you can, it was sort of like with a movie, you can kind of see how even the actors in that are tired in some cases, where it's just sort of like person after person after person.
Yeah, that's a shame. I think some of the actors probably get tired of it just like being, you know, herded around like cattle, which is kind of unfortunate, because some of them would be pretty cool and just do stuff for you on the side, but with creation around, they kind of can't, you know?
Yeah. And it's a good perspective to show that side where they've been locked into that role. And it sort of kind of reminds you of the fact that, hey, there is a person behind that role that they've been for so long, too.
Oh, no doubt. And the person of Jason Nesbitt has been crushed hearing this bathroom chatter.
Right.
From the guys peeing next to the three Klingons who've got very, very, very large bladders who are there the entire time.
I love that light up. That was awesome.
And he's just signing these autographs and being very just
jerk,
just dispassionate as before. And before, he was the most passionate of the signing actors. And then a bunch of nerds like us walk up to him.
That's when our C plot shows up and our nerds show up and ask all the questions that. So I have a side story here because, like, you know, this is the night of side stories. When we got passes to interview Terry Farrell, you know, as my other podcast, my competing podcast, and I know my partner and I were talking about it, and he's a big Star Wars fan and not a real big Trekkie. He's like, oh no, you know, you need to interview Terry because you're the Trekkie, that, you know, Terry Farrell's Jadzia Dax. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's cool. So, you know, I was sitting there. I'm ready to interview. She comes in, and she immediately catches on that one of us, because we both wear the same we wear jerseys that say our podcast name, so that we can be easily identified in our conventions. Okay, so she looks and notices that there's two of us, but only one of us is interviewing. She's, you know, she's game. She says, "Why are you interviewing me and not him?" And my friend, my partner in this said, "Oh, he's the Trekkie." And she looks at me in horror and goes, "I was just an actor." And I don't know. I mean, you know, she was really – she delivered a lot of beautiful one-liners that were awesome during that. So I think she was being a little bit more glib than – you know, I don't think she was serious. But these kids that show up here now in the movie are that Trekkie, the one who's like – in episode 15, you were on deck 16, but the plans clearly say that the ship that part of the ship was on deck 42, and why did you know? And they're always coming up with like the errors in the show. And I remember those Trekkies back in the day a lot more than I see them now. When you only had 79 episodes to pour over, every detail was known. You know, now we've got 700. So there's a lot. It's a lot harder to remember that one time in the episode in the pale moonlight when
when the Joker was dancing with Batman and Vicky Vale. Oh wait, no.
Wait a minute. Was that the one?
Was that the Batman?
Was that Batman?
Segue. Back up.
Crossing the streams.
Again. With the shiny colors.
Well, we are sort of going all over the place here. So anyway, these poor Trekkie, or these, well, not Trekkies.
Questies.
The Questies.
Or the Questers.
The Questers, yeah.
More than questoring, so I think the Questie assumption was accurate. No offense to the Questies.
See, Faith, now you're just dividing the line, man. totally
I'll
make
hug everybody after, okay? That's all I could offer.
Okay. That's fair.
Did you say get off?
I said that's all I could offer. Get out of your own fantasy world there.
Sorry.
I know nothing. I'm just sitting here being.
He's twiddling his thumbs. I can see it. He's like, what? No.
Staring away from dangerous territory.
He's like, I didn't hear that.
I know nothing. I know nothing.
Hear nothing, first see nothing, know nothing.
Run away. Yeah, no.
Anyway, he gets mad and yells at them, there's no goddamn ship! And storms off.
And he gets really mad.
Because crushing hopes and dreams of children is wonderful, apparently.
Right, he effectively has a get-a-life moment.
Yeah, he does the William Shatner get-a-life thing, goes home.
Yep, and then he leaves. So, he gets drunk, apparently.
But while he's watching his show, though, like he's like getting mad at them for like getting so into the show, and he's sitting there like trying to remember his lines as they're coming on.
Yeah.
So he's pretty invested in the show, too.
Well, and I think that's true of, I mean, this is obviously, you know, Tim Allen's character is obviously an analog, sort of an exaggerated analog of Bill Shatner. Yes. And I think that even though Bill Shatner has over the years tried to claim that it's just a show, he knows, you know, it's not important to him. I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think he's coming around to realizing that's his legacy.
Well, I think that talk and the captains kind of turned him around, because that's what Patrick Stewart kind of told him. He's like, you know, I wouldn't mind if that was, you know, forever remembers Captain Picard. And then William Shatner kind of came and was like, you know, maybe that's not such a bad thing after all. So
yeah.
Maybe he's starting to come around.
I think he's starting to move towards that. But I think that in the end, really, Bill Shatner has been watching the old episodes. And, you know, I think he, you know, maybe he doesn't watch the old episodes. But certainly, he feels it.
Yeah. And I mean, I did college theater, and I tried to remember my lines for all my lines from all my shows for years afterwards. I've forgotten most of them now, but I mean, every like year I try to go back and remember what my lines were, and just so I could say them to myself, because like I did theater, that was my part, you know. So, you know, doing a little bit of acting myself, I definitely kind of I can understand that, you know, he's kind of revisiting that while he's watching the show.
You don't want to hold on to that.
Yeah, and so. I mean, he kind of wants to. So we move. He gets drunk
because that's the solution.
On some good scotch, can live. I'm actually drinking some scotch, but I'm drinking Dewar's tonight.
It still drinks.
I'm drinking Rocky Mountain spring water. Well, or maybe it's just Denver City water. But either way,
it's
just Denver City water. But it's filtered.
I am grateful to say that I'm finally back on coffee, so yay.
You're back on coffee?
Yep, I can drink coffee once more.
Have you projectiled that lately?
Nope. Two rounds of antibiotics later, I feel better.
Awesome.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah, I had pneumonia, apparently.
Ooh.
Yep.
So the next day, a hungover Tim Allen.
And only a button-up shirt. A white button-up shirt, that is.
Because that makes sense.
And the Thermians show up to pick him up with a limo. I like the fact that they had a limo.
Yeah,
I like the fact that he said, "Get me a limo." And so these aliens,
we have secured your limousine.
We've procured your limousine.
I can't do it.
And like he's like, oh, where's my other shoe? And he's like bending over. He's totally mooning him. And it's like, we cannot believe how honored we are to be in your presence right now. He's like showing him his ass, like,
tilting their heads sideways while he's mooning them.
And then he's like, find the shoe. And they start looking up at the ceiling. It's like, where is it up there? Maybe I don't know.
Is the shoe up there?
I love how.
And I mean, we have to really give Enrico Colantoni, who's the guy who played Mathazar, because he just created this beautiful character and this voice that he speaks with and the walking style. And I mean, he really went all out. apparently all the other actors who played Thermians mimicked him.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's really cool that he kind of came up with it and they all followed him.
Aww. That's what I understand. I mean, I'm not seeing it necessarily in here, but yeah, I mean, I understand that was, it seems like I saw a behind the scenes somewhere. But yeah, that was a brilliant, he really did a good job. And that Thermian
weird
speech.
Walk. Yeah. So, yeah. Which is what we hear. So, which is what we hear the lady in the car, because they get in the limo and they're giving him the rundown of the briefing so that he can negotiate peace with Saris, since he's coming after their people. He's like doesn't even care. He's just looking at the girl. He's like, doesn't she talk?
Her translator is broken.
Right.
It was good. So he goes to sleep in the car because he's
hungover.
He's hungover, and when he wakes up, they're already taking him to they're preparing to take him to the bridge of the ship, which he thinks is a set.
And so he's pretty good looking.
He goes in there and Saris shows up.
He's like, do you have pages, or you just want me to wing it?
You just want me. So they just stick him in the center seat. He's like, it's like, you know,
screensaver too.
He goes, shoot him, and they do, and they just shoot him.
And the guys are all freaking out. They got their heads and they're leaning back, and they just got these horrified expressions on their face. And he's like, yeah, we've taken care of that. He goes out. He's like, what about Sarah? She's like, oh, he's good. I gave him both barrels.
And so they beat him back, but this time they stick him in the analog of the transporter, which covers him in goo and then slings him across the galaxy. And that's when he realizes
that he wasn't really in space. And then this is one of the moments that, like, you know, that Tim Allen really sold it, the look of awe. I mean, I know it's just he's looking at a green screen or whatever, but he did a really good job of looking like he was in total awe. And then looking like he was scared shitless when he got back to right next to a swimming pool. Like, just that panic in his eyes.
So he goes, huh?
This is one of those moments of, what did I drink? And was that real?
So he hunts down the rest of the crew, and he says, "But these termites.
Termites. No, but on the way, he bumps into the nerd kid. And they switch voxes because the termites give him...
Right. That's important. That's an important plot point.
The termites give him a vox. And he's like, oh, this looks real. And he bumps into the kid and they switch accidentally before he goes and meets his crew, who had done a Value City ribbon cutting that day, and more autographs.
My Grapthaw's hammer. Oh, what a
what savings. That had to hurt. Like,
Alan Rickman looks like the most uncomfortable person in the entire world. Like, I wouldn't want to be anywhere but here.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many times he had to, like, say the line, and then, like, you know, I wonder how many takes that took, just to piss him off, so he got even worse at saying it, because it just came off so awesome.
Yes.
Anyway.
So- The Thermians show up again after he tries to sell his crew, and the crew doesn't want to do it, and because they all think he's just being a jerk. The Thermians show up again because now they have to negotiate surrender, because Saris, caught off guard by this amazing attack, has now captured them. And of course, he's a real fight. You know, he's a real general, and these Thermians have no clue what they're doing. So that's our next section there.
Yes, he gets the crew, and they just, like, no. And they're like, wait, he's offering to do a gig with us. Like, never happens before. And then they all realize, like, hey, this is a gig, so let's do it, because it's a gig. Not because he asked this, but because it's a gig. And so they go, and then, like, well, there'll be four of you? And then the guy's like, no, I want to go, too. And, oh, five pods. And then they all shoot over the same way Jason did earlier. And in come these weird squid creatures.
Right.
With weird contraptions that are spinning and whirring in their heads.
I've got this. So one of the more hysterical things about this was that scene where they all show up on the little transporter platforms.
Yeah.
Nobody told Sigourney Weaver that Sam Rockwell was going to scream. So he screams and she jumps. That was totally honest. Because nobody told her he was going to do that. So he screams and she jumps. And it's like, totally. That was totally legit.
Oh, that is so mean to do to her.
But it's funny.
Oh, it is funny.
And she recovered from it just beautifully, obviously. She's a professional, but still, it's like... That's still one of my...
Oh, that makes it so much better.
I love the scream. It's so weird and awkward and just like... Ah! And then they turn like, oh my gosh, we forgot our appearance generators were off. And then, you know, Tech Sergeant Chen shows up and he's all like, oh, that was cool. And then Jason walks in and he's like, what's wrong with them? He's like, I don't know. Come on.
Because Tony Shalhoub, of course, is like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I'm cool.
I love how he's like the most easygoing of all the crew. He's just like all for doing whatever. He's like, yeah, let's do it. That was cool.
So then, after that, they realize that they're actually in a space dock, and they have to negotiate surrender now with Saris, because Saris, as you know, is going to destroy them all now. And actually, I do believe that somewhere along the line in the movie we find out that Saris pretty much wiped out all of them except for the ones that are on the ship.
Yeah, he killed them on their home... They wiped out their home world while they were, like, trying to get the ship repaired.
Yeah.
Or it could have been before. We don't know. It was never specified. Because they're such easygoing, like, almost oblivious race.
Yeah.
We don't... They're not very good
childlike.
With, you know... With, like,
very
bringing...
Childlike.
They're not very good with bringing the details until they're pushed. Because, you know, during their lunch, they're like, oh, we deserve to know. This happened to our previous thing. And they show them getting tortured. Everyone's like, we're going to leave. And then Saris has arrived and they can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And here, I'm going to send you guys a little link. Because this is from a video game. That came out around the same time, but it reminds me of how Saris looks, like that logo in the upper right-hand corner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, every time I see the bad guys in Galaxy Quest, I think of the game, because that logo is all through the game. Did you play that, Faith?
I'm looking right now.
Quake 2?
Yeah, and you know, there's a couple of shots where he kind of looks like some of the orcs from World of Warcraft.
Yeah, that big old patch on his eye.
And the semi-ponytail. I'm like, oh, I fought you.
Well, but the thing is, whenever he gets an erection, those things on his back shoot up that look like that logo.
Yeah, that's true. they managed to intimate so many things with just one appearance.
Yeah,
but the makeup was amazing. Like,
makeup was really good. And this is also, like, what, 1998? I mean, it's really good makeup.
99, yeah.
Gorgeous. But, I mean, absolutely beautiful.
And with a $45 million budget, I mean, it's not like this is a super obnoxiously expensive thing.
Yeah, that takes a lot of skill to replicate that over and over and over again for that. I mean, that's a lot of money and a lot of time.
Yeah.
Well, then we had a handful that showed their full face. A lot of the generic guys had, like, the mask they were wearing to kind of, like, cut down on the makeup. But the masks still look cool.
They kind of looked like ghillie suits.
And they still had to have, like, the full body, which was also pretty impressive looking.
Yeah.
They were very intimidating type of things. And then, like, you know, later in Enterprise, they almost kind of look like the reptilians there, too.
That's true. That's a good point.
I actually wonder if they borrowed it. Because Enterprise started in 01, which would have been only 2 years later.
It could have been. It's like sci-fi Star Trek-ception, where it's like, we're going to, you know, borrow from Star Trek, and then now we're going to borrow from something that borrowed from Star Trek and put it
now
into Star
gonna
Trek.
Now we're going to borrow it back.
Yeah.
Well, it's not uncommon for costumes to be reused. I mean, somebody had pointed out somewhere along the line that one of the bounty hunters in Empire was a reuse of an outfit from Doctor Who. They rented from the same place.
Well, yeah, I mean, because a lot of Star Wars are shot in Britain. So
right.
That well, what are you going to do with the leftover pieces? Are you just going to leave them on a shelf? Or are you going to try and get these things to make money? Because, I mean, right. That's a big thing with the prop industry is stagnant items don't make anything. And exactly. It takes a lot to make that item.
Yeah.
I know the Firefly, their space outfits are taken from something else. I can't remember if it was Starship Troopers or something else.
It was Starship Troopers, the purple yeah. bellies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. They reused a lot of those props in Firefly, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they just repainted them purple.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's not an uncommon thing.
More rabbit holes. Rabbit holes within rabbit holes.
All right, Alice.
Through the cosplay...
Galaxy Quest goes all over the place.
Through the podcast looking glass. Listening glass.
I think I love to cover all the things. I love Faith's first response is, I killed you once.
Yes!
Upon seeing a character. Didn't I kill you
in a game?
Right? Yeah, I've recently been playing back through Warcraft, so I was having this very intimate flashback of, you just died. And it took me a while, too. Like, we're talking about a good 2-hour battle, so, yeah. I mean, I had to work for it, too. So.
You know, I'm thinking I'll, like, even put this picture in here since we're talking about it, the one I shared with you guys. I might put this picture in there so they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay, so moving back to the story.
Saris doesn't want to talk. Saris yep. is all about shooting them. They start to run. No. Before they start to run, Tim Allen tries to do a Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
It's like, cut the video. We'll do this. And he's like, perhaps I'm not as ugly as I am stupid. And then he was like, I told you to cut the feed. And she's like, no, I know we're dead. Like, I know where the hold button is.
Yeah. She's got one of the best one-liners ever.
She's got lots of good one-liners in this movie.
Yeah. I think the funniest part was the statement she was making about Nichelle Nichols' position in Star Trek. You know, I have
one job on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
It's stupid, but I'm going to do it.
And Laredo's like, okay, I'm fine.
Yep, leaving you alone. I'm sorry. Yep. You're right.
I talked to the computer. That's getting really annoying. It's like, it's my job.
Let me have my
But
job.
Also later on in the movie, she's like, this was a horribly written episode. This writer should die. Like, that was also good, too.
Yep.
What's also good about the scene is she's also starting to lose her top. I don't know how, but...
Piece by piece, her uniform is vanishing.
Yep.
Yeah, I noticed that.
We're not there yet.
The red satin, like, I mean, that was a nice touch.
But we're not there yet. They... fail at the whole Kobayashi Maru against Khan. They start to run. Their ship is... This thing must be made of, like, the best metal ever. They get hit yep. by, like, 30 torpedoes from Saris' ship. Another 60 mines. And the thing's still one piece. But they do go adrift, and they have to come up with some, you know, technobabble way to get the engines working so they can try to find a new beryllium sphere, or warp core. As, you know, it's a Star Trek analog for that. Pretty much. Or dilithium, probably.
Somewhere along the line here, they're running, they finally run from Saris, and they crack their beryllium sphere.
Because they were hitting their turbo button too hard.
Yeah, that's what it was. So
it's only meant for short boost, like you know.
Tony Shalhoub says, hey guys. they want me to tell you. And like, it's like he goes through the whole movie like he's been on pot for the entire time. It's just awesome.
Hey guys. Yeah.
It's like opposite of Scotty, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can fix it.
You know, if we don't stop, we're going to like break up and explode. Just FYI.
Just FYI. So, yeah, so we have to go on this side quest in the movie, which makes total sense because we have to go to a planet.
Got to have your away mission. It's got to spoof everything Star Trek as much as it possibly can in a, you know, less than 2-hour movie.
And we've overlooked Sam Rockwell's character, Guy Fliegelman, who's
Sam Rockwell.
He played a red shirt in the original show. So he's sure this entire time that he's going to die because he's the red shirt.
It's like,
and he has that wonderful line, which is, "Oh yeah, what's my last name?
I'm not important enough for a last name." I love Sam Rockwell. He's probably one of my favorite comedic actors, I think. He's great in this film.
Yes.
And so, they have to go on the away mission, and he's like, I didn't want to stay on the ship because I was scared this was the episode where I get killed on the ship. But now we're going down to the planet. I'm scared I'm going to get killed on the planet. It's like, you're not going to guy die.
Sorry.
That was pretty good.
Did you open the door? Do you know if there's air out there?
He holds his breath. And then Tony Shalhoub's like,
Zane's okay.
Smells all right.
So that's when we have the super cute aliens that turn out to be not super cute.
Minas, not minas.
That's the first rule everybody should know by now. If it looks adorable, it's going to eat your face.
They're cannibals. Yes. Little cannibals.
I mean, obviously, these guys never play role-playing games.
Clearly, they did not.
The GM
have a
is always
idea.
A jerk.
Yep.
I mean, that's like first rule. The GM is a jerk.
And the bartender
and cute,
is always a demigod.
It's
going
to kill you. Yeah.
If it's cute, it's going to kill you faster than if it's not cute.
Yep. Right.
Like speaking,
and more horribly, it will hurt more.
Speaking of cute things killing you, we in DMs being jerks. I remember playing a campaign where we ran up against a bunch of pygmies, and they were like the hard, like we just killed like this really big bad thing, and like a bunch of midgets come and kill us, and like or like you know they pretty much wipe us. It was so like disheartening after such an amazing battle we had previous, and we got killed
by a bunch of half hobbits.
Yeah, they didn't kill us outright. They just took us down to zero HP and captured us. But still, it was pretty humiliating. It was overwhelming.
Yep,
That's horrible. I
called off by Ewoks.
Yep,
it's like
the teddy bear killed me.
Now I know how the Empire feels. Oh, and
exactly.
And speaking of, we totally zipped by this today. We were actually recording on May the 4th. So for any of you Star Wars fans who happen to listen to the Star Trek podcast, May the 4th be with you, and tomorrow's Revenge of the 5th. So look out.
Yep.
Well, it'll be passed by the time you hear this, but as of the recording.
We're wishing you
the
best.
So we all wish you a May the 4th be with you. A happy May the 4th be with you.
They find their replacement beryllium sphere on the planet, and they roll it back to the shuttle, and are chased by the evil pygmy blue alien things, which have razor-sharp teeth and are cannibals. Alan Rickman throws himself on the beryllium sphere as they roll it up in the shuttlecraft and throws himself off it the very last second to sacrifice himself for the crew.
Yep.
Oh, it's always about you, isn't it?
But then Tim Allen ends up on the planet.
And they knock him out.
And he loses his shirt somewhere along the line, too. That's even funnier.
When he gets attacked by the rock monster, and they're talking about beaming him up with their transporter, and he doesn't know what to do, and they beam up the pig monster, and he's inside out and explodes. Hold, please.
Yeah, that was another brilliant moment, because, it's inside out.
And exploded.
And exploded.
Did he say it exploded? Hold, please. Oh, I mean, the comedic timing in this movie is so good.
The movie is brilliant.
And he's the only one that doesn't duck. He's got, like, the internal guts of the thing, like, on his face, falling off his face as he's like, and it exploded. So great.
So then they finally actually succeed in beaming up Tim Allen's character, at which time Alan Rickman says, "I see they got you to take your shirt off."
I see you managed to get your shirt off, yeah.
I see you managed to get your shirt off. Yeah.
And then he smiles and smacks him on the back and hugs her head by other people.
And then we go off to the final act of the movie.
They try to get to the command deck, but they can't.
They can't.
Saris has invaded, and Malthazar is being tortured
with
a really mean-looking taser.
And he turns into his little octopus self whenever he gets
hit by.
So we go through this whole thing, and what do we got? So what Saris really wants Tim Allen to explain is that this was all a television show, but the poor Thermians have never been lied to in their entire existence.
They don't understand the concept.
They don't even grasp it.
And upon hearing about Gilligan's Island, they're like, those poor people.
They're all, like, traumatized, thinking that the Gilligan's Island is still stuck there. So finally, Tim Allen explains it, you know, like a five-year-old.
It's like, and, why?
Because that's what Sarah says. You explain it to him like a child. And so he has to explain it. Yeah.
That was pretty good.
It was very good.
So he does, and we have this moment where Enrico does that moment of just realizing it was really good.
It's shock and like horror and just utter disappointment. Just in his face, and that's all that really is. And actually,
he does a really good job of letting all of that play across his face. It's a brilliant job.
It was so sad.
And, it really was.
And Tim Allen delivering that line also was really sad and really heartfelt and really, really some nice acting chops on Tim Allen in that point.
Oh yeah. Well, I have always thought that Tim Allen was a good actor, even when he was in Home Improvement, because that's all comedy and funny.
Yeah,
but you know it is still a solid.
Well, I mean, like, he does a good job. But I mean, a sitcom usually doesn't have like gravitas like that.
Yeah, and you don't get that kind of cheat that really juicy part like that. A scene like that. That was a brilliantly done scene.
Yeah, it was all very good. And Saris is doing all this because he wants to know what the Omega 13 is for. Nobody knows, not even the Thermians, because Thermians don't know how to use their own technology when they make it. And the cast doesn't because they never got that far in the show.
So a lot of the Omega 13's one that we'll talk about when we get to this, because I think this is a funny... This is one of those refrigerator moments I had later on. I'll get to that at the end. But the Omega 13's a fascinating concept. So he wants the Omega 13. Nobody knows how to use it. Okay. That's cool. Except that Saris is going to kill everybody until he gets it.
No, he's just going to kill him anyway because he doesn't like the sounds termites make.
Yeah. He doesn't. Right, that's right. He doesn't like the sound of the Thermians.
The Thermians. When I grow tired of the sounds you make, you will die.
That's right.
You shall die.
So, okay, so we go onto this whole thing, and they're running around the ship trying to, you know, they're holding a last stand. They escape, and...
Doing a old, you know, oh, I don't like you, you always stood up my lines! They start punching each other, and they knock out the guards.
Right,
and he splits them up. We're gonna do this, this, and this. And of course, he goes with the lady, because you're the captain. It's like Scooby-Doo. It's like, you know, Fred is always gonna go with Daphne.
Yep. Because you know something's going on between Daphne and Fred.
Boing, boing. That's why they never figure anything out.
Right.
It's always Scooby, Shabby, and Velma end up solving things.
It's true. What were you guys doing back there? Nothing. Trying to solve the mystery.
Lots of sweating and panting.
Ruh-roh. Anyway.
Ruh-roh, Shaggy.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Well, we've even gone into Scooby-Doo today, guys. We have gone off the deep end.
Don't even call that the deep end. That is my morning.
I'm not saying Scooby-Doo is bad. I never thought I'd talk about Scooby-Doo on the podcast.
But there you go.
It happened.
I'm so happy.
Maybe that's the alcohol talking.
Could be.
If you wake up in the morning and you're mooning Thermians, then you drank too much.
Oh,
that's really
don't
that's
call like, us.
Life.
We can help.
Yeah, don't call
life
us.
Goals. You mean you don't want to come on the ship with me whenever the termites take us to the actual Enterprise?
Well, if the termites are taking us to the Enterprise,
then you might be on board.
So, okay.
Well, somebody has to rescue you. Screw it. I'm game.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having my back to save me from the termites and the Saris.
Having your back, man. Somebody's got to YouTube it. What are you talking about?
Live stream the shit out of it?
Yep. Man, we could actually fund ourselves then. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Just like, I'm like screaming for help, reaching my hand up to Faith, and she's like, that's really good. Just keep going. I'm like, what?
Keep doing it, man. We're up by 1,000 views. Keep going.
I should be the one holding the camera because I think they like to see you more than me, Faith. But you know, that's just,
well, you know,
that's
it's better when a guy screams like a girl than when a girl screams like a girl. So I'm just saying, we'll get a lot more like views. And
what if I scream like a guy?
Probably not so much.
Fliegelman.
Oh, like guy. Fliegelman. Yeah.
What if I scream like a guy Fliegelman?
Which that would work. Bring in that scene from X-Files.
The booze.
He was a mandroid because he had no emotion. But she was a mandroid. But the guy, he only did one thing. You know, that whole episode was worth it just to see David Duchovny go.
That's awesome.
That was the only part of any importance I ever remembered out of that one. It was my sister that made me watch it.
The title of it, because it involves the guy who was writing the stories. So that's the title of that episode. So we just call it the Men in Black episode because it's got Jesse Ventura and then
nice.
What you saw was the planet Venus.
It was a gaseous episode. A gaseous cloud. X-Files.
You know.
There we go. We've just about covered everything.
We really have covered a lot in this one. After all of this stuff, we go through the proverbial. Oh, we have to have the proverbial scene where they go through the chompers.
Oh, it's so great!
Some part of the ship that naturally squishes people.
No, but the
additional dungeon.
But
crawl.
At this you point, know, they use the Vox. And they got a hold of the kid.
Oh, that's right.
Because they need to know how to navigate the ship and turn off the self-destruct, which Saris has turned on. And, like, they've been using the Voxes the entire movie. There's no buttons on these things. But just now it rings at his house. Because right. They want it to.
Well, it's like communicators in Star Trek. I mean, there were buttons on them, but they didn't ever use the buttons except to tune.
Yeah.
That's apparently all those buttons did was to fine-tune. Because if they needed to call somebody, they just click it open and go, you know, Kirk to Enterprise, you know.
Yeah. It was kind of like Siri. It just would, you know, connect the signal. It was like Kirk to, you know, whoever. It would just, like, you know, connect the call.
When I got my first voice-activated phone, that was exactly what I wanted to try to get it to do, was, you know, have it train it so that the voice that it would learn would be, you know, guide David. You know, and that would be the code for calling you.
Yeah.
So that you know, I'd just go, guy to David. Ringing David.
Did it work?
No. It really wouldn't take it. It wanted me to say, call David.
Yeah, yeah.
It really didn't want me to change the dynamic.
Maybe one day a Star Trek addict will help design the software on a phone.
You stressed.
Yeah, Google, if you're listening.
Or Apple, if you're listening.
We would really like this toy.
Considering, you know, the show is on iTunes and on Google Play Music, hopefully somebody.
Yeah, if you're listening. Okay, so we went through this
whole
thing.
This whole scene that we're talking about kind of reminded me of one thing. The trash compactor in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Who puts this in a giant Star Destroyer?
Yep, that was, yeah.
With a monster in it. Why is there a monster in the trash compactor?
And what happens to the monster when the trash compactor compacts?
Well, no, the monster knows when to go. Because it just let Luke go.
And it made a
noise before it started compacting. So the monster got out.
That's right.
Or Meg from the Family Guy episode where they did Star Wars. It was a Meg monster in the trash compactor.
The Meg monster.
Oh, we even got Family Guy in there. Good job.
Yes.
Now we've got Family Guy. We went to Star Wars, Family Guy. Boy, we are all over all the map.
Wow. This has got to be a record.
We'll have to call this episode like Galaxy Quest to Infinity or something.
Right?
Like, it's a Galaxy Quest to Sidetracks.
Yep. Okay, so we also at this point in time, one of Alan Rickman's groupies is with him, who's been
his only groupie.
Yeah, his only groupie, who's been making all of the quotes from Dr. Lazarus, the character's quotes, you know, by Grapthar's hammer and all of those things.
Don't do it. I'm serious. Don't do it.
I'm serious. Don't do that. Don't say that. Yeah, it's just really, we missed talking about the scene where they fed them, where everybody got like food from home. And Dr. Lazarus had little beetles that were their feet still moving.
Just like Mother used to make.
Oh.
But he finds his groupie, and they're trying to save the termites from being suffocated. Because they're just slowly venting the air in one of the rooms to let them slowly die.
Yep.
And while they're doing that, we've got Tech Sergeant Chen, his girlfriend, and Guy trying to figure out what to do, and Guy wants to go out in a blaze of glory, and Tech Sergeant Chen's like, why don't you just, you know, maybe you're the plucky comic relief.
Right.
And then he's like, besides, I've got a really good idea. And they beam up the rock monster and put it into the room with all the guys playing, you know, monster poker.
Right.
Because they're all betting on the floor. You see dollars, you know, everywhere. So they're betting money, and the rock just appears, chases them out an airlock.
Yep. So great scene. There's the scene where the rock's like,
and the rock's like, I'm free.
So this is what it's like to be light.
Yep.
Oh.
So we lose the groupie, but this is the moment where Alan Rickman changes his character, because his character realizes that this guy just saved his life by standing in front of the bolt for him. And so at this point in time, Alan Rickman really, you know, he says all the words, you know, by Grapthar's hammer, I shall avenge you. You know?
I just wonder how that guy got shot, considering it was straight through his back, through his stomach. And the guy who shot him had just run around the corner as Alan Rickman looks out the corridor.
Yeah.
Maybe it ricocheted back and forth down the hallway until it got him.
Still an epic scene.
Definitely an epic scene. But I was like wondering where the bullet was, and I was looking, I'm like, how'd that hit him there? That's really strange.
It's another one of those pieces that fits awkwardly but needs to be there.
In episode 57, he got shot in the back, but he wasn't even anywhere near behind him. Sorry, I had to be one of the nerds. It was definitely a very powerful scene, and nice to see Alan Rickman's acting chops, because, you know, he believes it at that point. He didn't want to hear it, he didn't want to say it, and then he believes it, because he needs his dying friend to believe it.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. The Thermian is played by a guy named Patrick Breen, an actor. That's the actor who played it, and I just love the fact that his last name is Breen. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
To bring us back too firmly into Star Trek territory.
But actually, it sort of doesn't, because the Breen mask was modeled off of the Bosk mask that Princess Leia wore in Return of the Jedi.
I was just starting to think about Arrakis when you start talking about the Breen.
He who controls the spice.
Dune, yep.
Arrakis. Dune.
He has not been on Arrakis long enough for his eyes to change.
Right? He's not glowing.
No.
I'm sorry.
It never ends.
I'm sideways that time.
Rabbit holes within rabbit holes.
Dune now. So we've added Dune to this podcast.
I'm not apologizing.
Awesome. Yep.
This is the potluck episode of Something Always.
It's the guy with a something for everybody.
Yeah, you could have the you could have anything. You can even have sandworms. Sorry. Earworms. Now we're back at Star Trek 2.
There we go.
Boom.
It's there somewhere.
Steady eels. Okay.
a segue somewhere in there. Quick, keep going.
Keep moving.
Go.
They're in the underbelly of the Omega 13, and he asks, "Hey, what does that even do?" Some think that this device will destroy the universe within 13 seconds. Other people think this device will set back time 13 seconds. What good is setting back time 13 seconds? It'll let you fix one mistake.
Yep. So, enough time to redeem a single mistake.
So,
brain. What is brain? Okay.
Don't you mean Brian?
Brian. What is Brian? I have to bring us back to Star Trek. I just, you know, have to.
Yep.
The touchstone.
Box brain.
Back. Yeah. That's where I was going.
Well, we decided that 13 seconds is just long enough to fix one mistake if you made it within 13 seconds ago.
See, I don't know where they get their math, but in my experience, it takes a lot longer than 13 seconds for me to fix mine.
Well, that's,
I'm just saying.
Well, that's because you don't have the opportunity to rewind 13 seconds to take back that mistake. Lots of things could be fixed in 13 seconds if you got to rewind that 13 seconds. If you
come
let that
home,
13
you
seconds,
you told your boss to jump off a cliff, and your wife goes, "Hey, use the Omega 13." Yeah, it happened 2 hours ago. Why didn't you tell me 13 seconds after it happened?
Well, you were busy,
and the phone was on hold, and
you didn't answer your text message.
Answer the text message. And you can see the text. Quick, honey. Press the Omega 13.
Skype was bugging out. To bring it back to that.
Update.
Windows was updating. Its Omega 13 didn't want to work.
Your Windows is updating. Omega 13 will be available in 25 seconds.
Curses!
Why did I try to adult today?
Anyway, so, they're in the bowels, they've got
the countdown with 1 second remaining, because even though they're pushing the button, it won't stop until it's 1 second.
And Sigourney Weaver's outfit has reached the pinnacle of its offness.
Mm-hmm. Yep. One strap and, yeah.
Yep.
One strap.
Oh, red satin's amazing.
Yes. One small strap for man, one giant
cup
for gaping hole for mankind, right?
And while we're at it, we should just mention that Sigourney Weaver actually gets to show, and more than skin, she gets to actually get some pretty good chops on this one too, because her character is such an airhead, and that's such a 180 from Ripley.
Yeah,
she's not only blonde from the dark brunette and everything else, but the personality. Like, I do not recognize her as Ripley. Like, this is not Sigourney Weaver to me. It took me a good 30 minutes into the movie to click with, oh, holy crap, that's what's her name?
Yeah,
that's Ripley, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Ripley's Believable. I think they did that to make your character as different as could, so you could do the Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yeah, well, it's Ripley, believe it or not.
I love Ripley, too. Like, I've always loved her character. So for me to sit there and go, wait, I just realized that was very shocking for me.
I love her lines as they're running through the bowels of the ship. It's like, this was a horribly written episode. That writer should die. As they're going through all the different things, she starts to lose her clothes bit by bit by bit. But Jason's clothes seem fine. I don't know what happened.
Oh, yeah, everybody else seems just spiffy.
They hug and embrace, and he's like, and then nothing happens, and then he's like, oh, well, that's good, and they go back to the bridge, and he's like, what were you saying? What was that about? What? You had feelings for me?
Originally, this movie had an R rating, apparently.
I wonder
there was a lot more cussing.
I wonder
if you can really tell it with the chomper scene, because the chomper scene happens, and Ripley, or Sigourney Weaver says, screw that. Yeah, that's clearly dubbed over. She did not say screw.
No, nope.
That was not the word she said.
And I
that is not an instinctive word for her.
Yeah.
I just wonder what else would have made it rated R. Because, I mean, usually you can get away with like one F word in a PG-13 movie. So I wonder
I don't know if you could in 99. I don't know if that
Well, you got away with more back then than you do now. Like that, okay. Just for example, Gizmo, the movie with Gizmo, mm-hmm. in it, That's PG.
Right. Well, but we also gotten kind of more skewed and weird, you know, as to what does.
Well, and then
does
you got Insidious 6, which is also PG-13, mm-hmm. which is also one of the most aggressive horror movies that's currently on the market. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I you know, also wonder if Sigourney lost more of her clothes in the original cut, and they're just like, yeah, we got to reshoot this so we can get a PG-13 rating. I don't know. It's just like, I'm really curious about the old cut. I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, like a director's cut that was restored.
Yeah,
apparently it had a lot more cussing in it, and they went back and reshot scenes so that there wasn't so much cussing.
Still, but yeah, that's to hear it.
Yeah, I'd love to see the original take on it.
Yeah, me too. Originally, DreamWorks wanted Harold Ramey to direct it.
Whoa.
Huh.
But he didn't like Tim Allen. He wanted so he turned. He left. He left after starting it. I mean, Ramey started it and was hired in November of '98 to do this film, but departed in February because he just didn't. He really wanted Alec Baldwin for the role, and Alec turned it down.
I'm so glad Alec turned it down. I just can't see Alec Baldwin doing this.
Mm-mm.
No, he wouldn't be. There were points where I think only Tim Allen really could have pulled that off.
Yeah,
but we're seeing this with 2020 hindsight. I mean,
that's true.
If you had said, as we just said at the beginning of this podcast, oh, Tim Allen's going to be the captain. Yeah, right. You know.
Well, I mean, that's what I was thinking even back then. I'm like, I don't see it. But I mean, looking at the casting decisions now, and I'm like, I don't see it either. So I'm just like, you know. It really worked out well that Tim Allen did it, and he did a great job in it.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you think about Tim Allen, you're like, Tim Allen's going to get on the bridge and go, you know, and you'd be like, really? Seriously? You know, yeah. So, but he didn't. Yeah. He turned it into a great movie. So I guess in the end, you know, we go through a little bit more of the movie here, and now they've turned off the
self-destruct.
Self-destruct, and now we have the clever moment where Tim Allen's character takes the bridge and cleverly actually wipes out Saris's ship.
Using very smart tactics and
using really smart, interesting Captain Kirk-like tactics.
It was awesome. They take a ship back to the minefield. They grab a whole bunch of mines magnetically, and they shove them down, like, literally the gullet of the ship, because it looks like it's got almost an open maw on the front of Saris' ship. And they just...
You ever notice how much it looks like, kind of like the ship from Star Trek 2009?
Sort of, yeah. Like, it's got that dark, like, weird nebulous thing. It doesn't have, like, all the tentacles, but it definitely has, like, that kind of vibe to it.
It looks an awful lot like that. The I can almost see the name, and I'm not getting it. Darn it.
The Narada?
Narada, thank you. The Neurotic. Gotcha.
Johnny Mnemonic. Neurotic. I don't know. It's bad.
Yes, all the above.
He uses some brilliant tactics. Saris somehow runs away. Everything's fine. They're going back to Earth. And after going through the wormhole, they can't. They have to separate. But
they're going Mark 15, which, you know, is impossible.
It's impossible to stop. I cannot do it, Captain.
The kid comes down the stairs because he's got to help them land. I just love that line because I think I've seen that face on my mom's face.
Yeah.
At least once over the years where I came into the room and said, blah, 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 blah. And she's okay. You know,
okay, be home by dinner.
Hey, at least he's getting out.
At least he's outside. Tech Sergeant Chin walks into the room as they're approaching Earth, and then he starts shooting people. This is when I noticed how much the laser gun looked like the Star Trek in the Darkness laser gun.
Yeah.
He gets shot. Tim Allen gets shot. The rest of the crew gets shot as he turns into Saris. Yeah. And he's like, now the Czar, activate the Omega-13, and then they activate the Omega-13.
And they go back to the beginning of that 13-second period, which I think, because they're running in slow motion, is actually like 30 seconds, but that's okay.
It's fine. Well, I mean, like, when you start getting shot, your adrenaline goes, like, you know, like...
Yeah, and everything gets really slowed down, and...
it's true. Like, I don't know if either of you have been in like a really severe car accident, but I've been in two rollover accidents where the car flipped over three or four times and I was thrown from the vehicle once. And wow. I don't know if you've seen Fight Club, but yeah. The crash in Fight Club where he makes him let go of the wheel and the thing like starts spinning and it does that whole scene in slow motion. That's how an actual car crash feels, but probably slower. It feels slower in real life. Wow. Like it's
the way the adrenaline interacts with your body. It's so that your body has time to compensate.
Yeah, like it's like your body trying to save your life. It's like you literally go into bullet time, even though there's nothing you can really do when you're in that kind of situation. It just slows down, and it's incredible. And just, you know, after I was in the crashes and I saw Fight Club, and I'm like, this looks exactly how it felt. I mean, minus the pain, but I mean, like, it's a very good representation. Yeah. And so, minus, you know, the ouch. Yeah, minus the ouch.
Yeah.
But it's a good representation for as good as film could capture, I think, on, you know, yeah. It looks how it would, you know, how it would feel. And that same thing when your friends are getting shot and you're getting shot, the adrenaline kicks in and, you know, that scene's definitely in slow motion. So I can definitely buy that 13-second exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes and starts beating up Tech Sergeant Shen and everyone's like, no, don't do that. What are you doing? It's Saris. It's Saris.
Turns out being Saris. Yeah.
And Malthazar starts beating him up with his cane. If only he did that halfway through the film.
Right.
He knows how to use that cane.
So they finally end up with they separate part of the ship and leave the other part to Malthazar and the Thermians. And the crew return to Earth at a super high speed, which ends up having their ship crash into the wall of the convention that they started the movie at.
And they walk out on the same stage, even though one of the cuts shows the stage get completely ripped up.
Yep. So they walk out onto the ripped up stage that's somewhat healed.
And someone knows to introduce them. Like, someone's like in that booth, like watching the entire thing happen.
Yeah, somebody's introducing them as they come out of there.
He's not calling 911 for all the people that get run over.
No.
Or you know, trying to figure out how to, you know, fix all those things that got destroyed. He's just like, oh, it's the actress. I'm going to announce them as they walk out. It was great. And they walk out in basically almost the same order as they did earlier in the movie.
Yep.
But with a couple additions. Tech Sergeant Chen's girlfriend. Because
then Saris comes out one last time. Because they can't die. The bad guys just can't die.
His ship exploded. They shot him a couple times, or they beat him up on the bridge. They didn't shoot him.
But he finally comes out. Yeah, and they shoot him, but not before all the geeks start shooting at him with their play guns. Yeah,
their play guns. And Saris starts to get mad, and then Jason Nesbitt grabs Laredo's gun, does his hero roll, shoots him, and he goes up into a puff of smoke and like a little bit of sparks.
The puff of smoke was awesome.
It made it look like 60s Star Trek, like just like, you know, a weird death like that.
It was beautiful. And that's pretty much the end of the film.
The
Galaxy Quest.
Except we do see Galaxy Quest continues. The journey continues.
The journey continues. We get an epilogue on it, where we see that all of the actors are back at the new episodes of Galaxy Quest. And they're all back there, including one of the Thermians who stayed.
Jane Doe,
who stayed with Tech Sergeant Chen because they had a romance going.
Oh man, that was such a good part earlier in the movie where they start making out.
Yeah. And then, guys, get a room.
And then like it's the tentacle. Her tentacle starts surrounding him, and then his like eyes roll back in the back of his head, like he thinks that's the hottest thing ever. And like they start making out, and they go on the ground. Like,
oh, that's not right.
And then she turns to a full like octopus thing. He's like, oh, that's not right. Oh, like I know, I didn't talk much about Sam Rockwell through this whole thing, but he really is great. He really is. He just didn't really have a lot to do with the plot, but everything he did in the movie was fantastic. Love Sam Rockwell.
Well, he was like the garnishment of the entire thing. It was beautiful, you know. Uh-oh, we lost Faith again. Everything's rebooting.
Oh, so oh, she's no. got power.
It's going to be a minute or two.
Yeah.
So while we're waiting for Faith, I'll read some of the quotes that were by many of the...
Star Trek actors.
Patrick Stewart said, I had originally not wanted to see Galaxy Quest because I heard it was making fun of Star Trek. But then Jonathan rang me up and said, you must not miss this movie. See it on Saturday night in a full theater. And I did. And of course, I found it brilliant. Brilliant. No one laughed louder or longer in the cinema than I did. But the idea that the ship was saved and all of our heroes in that movie were simply saved by the fact that there were fans who did understand the scientific principles on which the ship worked was absolutely wonderful. And it was both funny and also touching that in that it paid tribute to the dedication of those fans, which is a great thing that Patrick Stewart said, because, I mean, he always likes to give us the props, the fans who've held the show together all these years. And I love the fact that he does that.
Oh,
Tim
yeah.
Russ, I'm sorry?
Definitely. And, like, I love how the movie tied in. It's such a Star Trek documentary, like I said. You know,
it is.
Because it's, like, it's doing, like, the old Star Trek, it's doing the conventions, it's doing a reboot of the show, and it's showing how crazy and passionate the fan base is. It's a perfect documentary, almost. A documentary movie.
Yeah. Yeah, well... And that's what George Takei said. He said, I think it's a chillingly realistic documentary. The details in it, I recognized every one of them. It's a powerful piece of documentary filmmaking. And I do believe that when we get kidnapped by aliens, it's going to be the genuine, true Star Trek fans who will save the day. I was rolling in the aisles. And Tim Allen had that Shatner-esque swagger down pat. And I roared when the shirt came off. And Sigourney Weaver said, there goes that shirt again. How often do we hear that on the set? I had started with Tim Russ earlier, and I
Tim
said, I've had flashbacks of Galaxy Quest at many conventions, and I've gone to since the movie came out. I thought it was an absolute laugh a minute. Bill Shatner said, I thought it was very funny, and I thought the audience that they portrayed was totally real, but the actors that they were pretending to be were totally unrecognizable. Certainly, I don't know what Tim Allen was doing. He seemed to be the head of the group of actors, and for the life of me, I was trying to understand who he was imitating. The only one I recognized was the girl playing Nichelle Nichols. I wonder whether that was in tongue-in-cheek or not. But the,
I don't
but
know.
One of the,
like, that just, like, is he being serious? I mean... It might be tongue-in-cheek, but I'm just like, I can kind of see it not being...
You could almost see that he would say that literally.
Yeah. I could see it.
Will Wheaton said, I loved Galaxy Quest. I thought it was brilliant satire. Not only of Trek, but of fandom in general. The only thing I wish they had done was cast me in it and have me play a freaky fanboy who keeps screaming at the actor who played the kid about how awful it was that there was a kid in the spaceship.
Nice. That would have been awesome.
It really would have been.
That would have made... I really... like. They should, like... They should do a Galaxy Quest special edition, right?
Right.
And then just edit Will Wheaton into it. Like, just put him up on green screen and just, like, have him do it. Like, just have several cuts going to that or something like that. Or, like, you know, like, well, he's, like, waiting in the line. He's like, man, I don't want to talk to Laredo. Or, like, have a scene where, like, Laredo goes into the bathroom and, like, Will Wheaton's just talking crap about him. That would be, like, it's, like, right after, it's like you see Tim Allen leave the restroom and then they show, you know, Laredo and Will Wheaton walk in. It would be hilarious.
That would be so awesome.
Come on, please, Paramount, do a Galaxy
we
Quest.
We need this.
Extended edition. Do a George Lucas on this, please.
Yeah. So as a sort of a parting thing, there's been talk about a sequel or a television series.
Yeah, that popped up last year. I remember.
Yeah, and Tim Allen said in January of this year, he said, I'm not supposed to say anything. I'm speaking way out of turn here. But Galaxy Quest is really close to being resurrected in a really in a very creative way. It's closer than I can tell you, but I can't say more than that. The real kicker is that Alan now has to be left out. It's a big shock on many levels. So,
I thought I'd heard something earlier this year, too, that said they were going to go ahead with a sequel, but then they can't now that Alan Rickman has passed away.
Well, that's what Sam Rockwell was saying to the Nerdist, podcast in April, so last month. He said that the cast had been about ready to sign on for a follow-up with Amazon, but Rickman's death, as well as Tim Allen's television schedule, proved to be obstacles, and so they ultimately did not. And I don't know if that means that it's just done McDone, or, you know, what does that mean? But
is it tabled for now? Or yeah, that would be nice to know a little bit more about what that means.
I don't know. And yeah. when they were talking about the TV show, there was no, like, you know, because Paramount announced it last year, they were talking about doing a Galaxy Quest TV show.
Yeah.
Before we got the news, there was going to be a Star Trek new show, and everyone's like, "Oh, I was like, come on, why are you doing a Galaxy Quest show? Do a Star Trek show, come on!" But I mean, like, I didn't know if they were going to use the original actors in the TV show version of it or not. So I mean, theoretically, they could just do a whole new cast if they went the TV show route.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's sort of Galaxy Quest in a rabbit holey sort of way. I think it's funny that Star Trek fans at the 2013 Star Trek convention in Las Vegas, Galaxy Quest received enough support in the Star Trek film ranking that it ended up being ranked number 7 of all the Star Trek films.
Wow.
That's
nice.
That's a kick in the balls to all those Star Trek movies that didn't make it.
It's kicking the balls all the ones that are eating on.
But, like, what do you guys think of the ship in Galaxy Quest? I think it is absolutely beautiful.
I think it's gorgeous.
Like, it seems like it has less of the weak spots than the Enterprise actually does. If you're thinking about the original Enterprise with the neck and with, like, the itty-bitty struts, the nacelles, like, everything on the Galaxy, on the NSC Protector.
Smaller, too, though.
Yeah, I think it's smaller, too.
Like, significantly smaller.
Yeah.
Maybe. It seemed pretty big. If you look at the space dock scene, it looks pretty big.
Well, I mean, it depends on the size of your space dock.
Well, no, but I mean, you also got a pretty, you know...
Hey, we don't make fun of people for the size of their space dock.
Oh, no, but we were talking about perspective and comparison. I mean, you have to have appropriate context.
That's true, but you did see people standing there who backed away from the windows as the main hull came by.
Now we're doing size comparison analysis. That's great.
So I mean, like that main. I mean, it's probably not as tall as the Enterprise as far as deck numbers, but it's probably at least as long as the primary hull.
Yeah, it seems smaller.
It probably is.
Hmm.
But size. But we're not talking about size. We're talking about structural integrity. Like it seems like a really solid ship.
It does seem like it's much more of a solid ship.
It's more sturdy
than the Enterprise would have been design wise. And I loved how it was floating adrift. It just made that Q in the. It's just a really cool looking ship, and it looks really feasible. Like they did a great job designing that. I think
that was probably a lot of fun for them to do too.
Yeah, and it's a cool ship, and I like how it even had a separation feature, like, you know, the Enterprise D did.
but if you do it at Mark 15, that's just insane.
That's insane.
Yep.
Roman candles for visual acuity.
What a great movie! That was a great movie.
I was great to see it again. I hadn't seen it, like, hadn't sat down and, like, watched it in probably years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while for me, too. That was actually, when I first watched that was because of my mom. She and I sat down and watched it together. So it was kind of one of those moments of, did we really watch this together? Wait a minute. I almost saw Booby. I almost saw Booby in a movie that I'm watching with my mom. So it was kind of one of those awkward moments for me, too. So, and then looking back on that all those years later, I'm like, That was really cool. Oh. I'm glad you watched that with me.
Oh, you mean seeing it in the movie theater?
Yeah. Yeah, we went out and we actually saw it. And she and I were not ones that usually would go to movies together. It was usually me and my dad or me and my sister. So Mom and I actually went out and watched this movie together. It's kind of one of the few movies, because we watched the Star Trek movies together as well. And mm-hmm. That was a big deal for us. It was like our tradition. Yeah. And then this came out and she's like, you know, we're going to go see this. And I'm like, I just saw Cleavage and Sigourney Weaver with my mom in a public theater.
Yay! Oh, man.
It's just one of those teenage moments of, oh, my God.
Well, speaking of teenage moments like that, I mean, we saw Galaxy Quest together. My dad took me and my brother, but my dad also took me and my brother to see Braveheart when I was like 12 or 13. So that's not just cleavage. That's like full on boobs and sex. And I was like, yep. I was like, am I supposed to look away?
Am I supposed to look awkward? Am I supposed to be fascinated? What am I supposed to do?
It's like, am I supposed to look away? Because, like, you know, if anything hinted at this on television, my dad would have flipped the channel. But, like, you know,
you can't flip the channel in the theater.
Yeah, the theater, and he didn't like try to cover my eyes. So I'm like, am I supposed to like do it myself? Like, what? It was very awkward.
It's moments like these that make you think about this, because there's going to be a moment now when I'm with my son, and that same
type thing of scene is going to happen. Occur.
You get to explain
and something like that's going to happen. I'm going to be like, I've got a little bit of a different thing, though. I mean, because this household's like flipped. You know, boobies aren't a big deal. It's right. Violence that I really have a problem with.
That's how I am with my kids, though. Because, like, you know, yeah. let's just not be aggressive with each other. You know, I'm very anti-bullying anyways, and that extends to the way I raise my kids.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, but and that's my thing is, like, he's not allowed to watch things that are excessively violent.
Yeah. You know?
But nudity is not a big deal. That's okay. But the violence is what I'm really – and that's harder to watch in our society because nobody warns you about the violence. They only warn you about naked people.
Yeah.
And so
– yeah.
It's much
there's
harder.
There's a lot of body shaming, too. So that's actually why I'm kind of lax about it with my kids is because I want them to be comfortable with who they are.
You got
instead
it.
Instead of all this, you know, well, they shouldn't look like this. And, oh, God, it that's a huge subject. Yeah, yeah, honestly, violence and that's a little bit more emotionally traumatizing than nudity. Like, I mean, you can get over the fact that everybody is naked. Yeah, seriously, there's a reason why we wear clothes in our society. But understanding how violent and toxic
right now
are,
on the podcast. Totally.
Right? Totally. Our views just, like, jumped. Why aren't you guys streaming this?
Oh, God. Because you really know, I'm just... No, just me. It's not such a problem with Faith and David, but, man, you do not want to see me. That's just, you know, all this. I'm surprised these two still have eyeballs. It's just, oh, it's horrible.
There's a reason why there's camera filters.
Yeah, well, it's like that scene at the end when they open the ark. It's the same thing.
Faces melt.
But, you know, okay. You stay on this podcast for long enough, you generate immunity to certain things after a while. So you just get used to it. It's like enough exposure. You're fine.
She just said exposure.
Yes, I did.
You admit it. You admit it when he says things.
Sometimes I have
she
to maintain
plausible
denial. I like you both. Okay, quit fighting.
Yeah, which one do you like better, though?
So is he Trekkers and I'm Trekkies? Is that the thing
you're trying something like?
You're a quester.
I'm a questie. Nor dying.
It's like, cry, no, she doesn't
what
like
what they don't
much.
Know is they're both really wearing red shirts.
I'm wearing right. a Fallout shirt today.
Oh, representing. There we go.
I usually wear my Star Trek shirt when we podcast, but, you know, that's, I don't know, it just didn't happen today.
Yeah, I didn't wear a Star Trek shirt today. I'm just wearing, like, a normal green pocket tee, or gray pocket tee.
Yeah, I've got my standard standby black tank top going. Because nothing shows up when you're working on props. it's a work thing.
Like the critical thing.
It's like, will this survive what I'm working on today? Excellent.
Yep. No, there's like I've got a certain set of clothes that I wear whenever I'm working with stuff that's horrible. Like, I've got spray adhesive.
Oh, that's yeah, that's just nasty. A nightmare. It is and everything.
Because I just want to glue in these pieces into my sketchbook and stuff like that. And we're so, no, it's got to get everything. And I don't know how
you're gonna
it gets on
stuff. You're going to glue yourself to it. You're going to glue yourself to the desk. You're going to glue the book to the desk.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everything.
It's like a Mr. Bean moment all of a sudden.
It is.
I mean, you've got everything glued to you, and you glued to everything, and
you end up looking kind of foolish, and then somebody discovers you in the stuck position. It's like, wait a minute, you're not seeing what you think you're seeing here.
It's like an Iron Man. He's like, come on, you've seen me do in the middle of worse things.
Yeah, I've done worse. Don't judge.
I've been in worse. Well, there you go. Well, that's Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest.
Yep. This was a, and everything
and about
else.
Every
and
other
everything band else
that we could get into.
Yeah, we even covered Braveheart. That's pretty impressive. Like, we started with Ghostbusters, and then we ended with Braveheart somewhere in the middle of there.
Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah, and Scooby-Doo.
Man, this has gone everywhere. This has gone everywhere. So
we
hope you enjoyed this most derailed episode of Synthaholics. You can
Synthaholics Unhinged.
All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find that at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. We love your emails. We want to read them on the air. Please do that. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's Synthaholic Duo. I'm David_J_Duncan.
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter at GS Davis Art and USS Tamerlan. And on Facebook at USS Tamerlan.
And you can follow Aaron at Blackbird2004. Please rate us and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. We love reviews, we love stars, especially on iTunes, so we can get higher up in the rankings so more people can find us. And any 5-star reviews you leave, we will read on the air and say thank you.
Yeah.
Yep, we miss getting mail.
We miss mail and reviews. We also have a Patreon, so if you want to come, send us some money, love, you can find us at patreon.com/synthaholics. And we have recorded already our first bonus episode, and we'll have to do another one soon for Patreon members.
Yeah.
Yep, so the more you guys donate, the more shenanigans you get from us.
Shenanigans!
Even more than what you usually get. Yes, there is another level beyond this.
It's an extra an extra shenanigans a month.
At least one extra shenanigan a month.
At least. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper. In the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. We lost faith.
Faith? Well. Uh-oh. Sky pickuped on me, she says.
At least it didn't barf on her.
That's true.
Projectile vomit's Skype, never
you know,
fun.
You know, sometimes when Skype has indigestion, it gets like acid reflux.
Like when we talk, like
does,
when we talk
it does with the data blurb.
I don't know if you heard the part where I said, like, I'm glad it. You said it hiccuped on you. I was like, well, at least it didn't barf on you.
You know, data vomit is bad.
Data vomit is bad. Just like when we talk with Vic Mignogna. Oh my god, that was so bad.
Oh, I felt so bad for him.
I felt so bad for him too. And everyone's like, oh man, he's so aggravated about Star Trek Continues. And
no, he's pissed off at my connection.
He's pissed off at my connection. But no one has to know that. That's behind the scenes stuff that I've only told a couple people.
I'm still glad we did that.
Yes, but if you're listening to this podcast now, after listening to the Vic Mignogna podcast, now you have some behind the scenes information that's now in front of the scenes.
Skype is unfriendly to us from time to time.
Skype is mean.
We try to love her, but no.
Skype is a cruel mistress.
Oh, yes. It's because Microsoft, bought her and pimped her out. She gets cranky.
I'd be
having used Skype when I was in Japan, I can say that it's actually much better now than it used to be, amazingly.
That's a fair point.
Well, there. Yes and no. It worked really good, and then Microsoft bought them, and it went to crap. And then it got better after Microsoft had it for a little while. But the transitionary period was awful.
It was miserable.
It just doesn't play nice with Windows 10. That's the big problem I've noticed lately, is that just Windows 10 hangs it up.
Well, I'm using OS X, so I'm good right now.
Boom. Oh, aren't we special?
Doing well, it on my laptop.
I also think that we've got, you know, we've got a lot of different factors, because I'm running Windows 10, but I'm also running, you know, middle of Denver internet, which
much
is
much better internet than mountain
much,
bandwidth.
Much better than out in the middle of nowhere where you are, Faith.
And I got
recently stormed as well. Our lines are soaked, so
and I've got,
there you go. It's like asking for it.
Old Town Buffalo internet.
Yep.
Oh no, yep. No. Mine's nice. Actually still worse than that.
Yes, that's true. I'm probably somewhere between you and Guy.
Yeah. My internet looks up to your internet in envy.
And mine looks up to Guy's in envy, probably.
Probably.
Oh, now we got internet envy going.
Doesn't know what to do. It's just confused. It's like aimless wanders.
What do you want me to do? Okay.